Sports with Balls. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan, featured artist Friday, chosen by you, the people. It's the Monkees. So there you go. We're jamming. Haven't even heard the hits yet. We're going deep, deep cuts with the Monkees right now. So if you want to get in with a request, send your request to the Plazaport text line, 410-583-1057. Bob, Andy, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw. Other side of the glass, Ravens 2.5-point favorites at home against the 3-0 Buffalo Bills. Here to preview that and talk about the week it was at practice for the Ravens. Not quite done just yet from the Baltimore Banner. Let's welcome back, as we do every Friday, Jonas Schaefer. Jonas, good morning. I hope you're ready to monkey out here today. You ever been on the last train to Clarksville before? Because you're on it now, baby.
I always appreciate you guys having me on, because you always make me feel so young with all these references.
I mean, I think I was still wearing diapers when that stuff came out. But anyway, Jonas Schaefer, the offensive line injuries this week, it seems to have been vast. Who is in real danger of not suiting up Sunday night on national television here?
I think it's just Voorhees. We saw some stuff in the locker room that I can't share, but it has me a little bit pessimistic about his availability for Sunday night's game. But other than that, Linderbaum was back to limited. I think McCary was full participation with the neck injury. So I feel good about those two guys being good to go. I mean, Linderbaum will practically play through about everything, but that left guard spot is definitely a concern, because you just don't know how much of a possible chain reaction that could have along the rest of the offensive line. Do you slide McCary inside and then put Rosengarten out there to deal with Von Miller, or do you put Ben Cleveland in there? You drag him out of the doghouse, or maybe is he so firmly in the doghouse that it's someone like Josh Jones who gets that start? So I will know more in about half an hour about whether Voorhees is going to be a viable option for this one, but I'm a little bit pessimistic right now.
Hey, you mentioned Ben Cleveland. I know John Harbaugh a couple of weeks ago said he loved him, even though he was like pretty much dismantling to everyone there. So he does like him or doesn't like him? Where are we going with this?
Well, I think he liked him enough to, I guess if you want to, I don't want to say read the tea leaves, because it's not much of a tea leaf, but the fact that it was Ben Cleveland who went in as that sixth offensive lineman for that 1 yard touchdown score by Derrick Henry, trust him enough to at least be a road grader up front, or a competent enough road grader up front. But obviously there's more to the game than just run blocking, especially when you've got a defensive front as stout and as ferocious in the pass rush as Buffalo. So I feel like, if there is an option and they want to keep the carry at right tackle and maybe rotate him with Rosengarten, then Cleveland would probably be the favorite at left guard. But I don't know how much a reflection that is on the improving relations between John Harbaugh and Ben Cleveland, and how much of it is a reflection of just a lack of trust in the other options there.
The thing that I see, Jonas, is Cleveland's a bad matchup in this game, just because, the guy who's going to be over him is Ed Oliver, and he's all about quickness. So Cleveland is not all about quickness. So to me, that's a bad matchup for the Ravens if they were to do that. I like the idea of putting McCary in there, who's more athletic and stuff, and then putting Rosengarten on the outside. Because when you watch film, what did you think of Von Miller? I didn't think he's, he looks old.
I didn't spend a whole lot of time looking at him, Vinny. Whenever I've seen flashy highlights of his, he looks like he has that trademark burst when he's winning, which maybe is not as often as I thought it would be. What caught my eye was, I guess, his limited usage, but his very, very effective usage when he's been out there. I think he's averaging something like one sack every 21 or 22 pass rush snaps, which is just an absurd rate. But the fact that that ratio is that high speaks to the fact that, they clearly don't trust him to play that often, or to hold up, as he once did, as a kind of warhorse over the course of a 17-game season. But that they have good depth. I mean, Epineza is a nice player. Rousseau is obviously a really solid option on the other side. But when when Von Miller has gotten home, and he's gotten home enough to get three sacks, he's looked like he's been able to be the kind of guy who would turn and burn back in his heyday.
Now, the other thing I see is to me, it's a small defensive front. You know, the linebackers are little, and Spector, you know, is like 230 pounds, 6'1", and the defensive line is not big. That's why I think, you know, if the Ravens can be physical up front, I think they're going to be able to run the football on them.
Yeah, I think that is, for me, the most compelling matchup of this whole game. What's confusing, Vinny, is, you know, you dig into the stats, and for whatever reason, Buffalo has defended like heavy personnel better out of nickel a lot better than they have when teams have run out of 11 or out of spread look. So that is a little bit confusing. I don't know if teams have just been telegraphing when they're running out of those jumbo looks, and Buffalo's kind of able to tee off on it. But it's not just the defensive front that, you know, in the past has been able to limit the Ravens. It's been Teron Johnson. I mean, he's a terrific slot defender, just, you know, really keys.
He's out,
you know, so much of what they do. And, yeah, he's out. And you don't feel great about his replacement there. And, you know, you like how the Ravens have been able to find ways to get creative solutions out wide with their pin and pull stuff, with their tosses, or just with simple tight end blocking. So you feel like there is that opportunity for the Ravens to just run wild against this Buffalo team. I mean, they just will not play in base personnel. So they are literally going to dare the Ravens to run the ball, I think. But if Buffalo is able to do what they've done in the past and say, it doesn't matter if you have Patrick Ricard, it doesn't matter if you have a big blocking tight end, we can still win up front enough to get you into these third and long situations, then it feels like it could be a similar ending to these other Ravens-Bills games.
Now, I don't know what you think, but like when I looked at the offensive line for Buffalo, I don't think Dawkins is very good at all, and I don't think McGovern, the center, is very good. And I think the Ravens have huge advantage there, and I don't think their line is good run blockers. So if they can make them one-dimensional, I think that'll be big, because none of their receivers really scare you.
Yeah, I think if I'm the Ravens, I feel comfortable with knocking Marlon Humphrey inside and just telling him to blanket Shakir, because
you think he can handle him with his quickness?
I don't know. I think just physicality wise, you know, maybe you can bump him off his route. It is a good question, but I, you know, Mac Hollins leads that Buffalo Bills team in routes run and has three catches. Keon Coleman is obviously still coming along as a route runner, apparently just has not been able to get really any kind of separation. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of funnel targets to Shakir. The Ravens have to figure a way to deny that, because he's caught literally every single pass that Josh Allen has thrown him. But up front, I think I'm definitely more high on Deion Dawkins than you are, Vinny. But I think it's ultimately kind of a moot point, because Josh Allen just doesn't get sacked. I think he's, like, you know, PFF has him down for 29 quarterback pressures this year, and he's been sacked twice. You know, the pressure to sack ratio that he's on right now is like historically good. I think that's 6.9%, and the best that any quarterback, you know, has done over the past 4 or 5 years is like 9%, 10%. So he is that much better than the best rates over the past few years. And the Ravens, I think they've done a good job of converting, you know, those pocket crushes into sacks, but they just haven't been getting into the backfield enough that I feel like Buffalo should be all that concerned about their pass rush. So I think that's going to be a really, really crucial spot for the Ravens. If they get home, you got to wrap up Josh Allen, throw him down to the ground. But if you can't actually get there, then he's just going to have all day to throw and pick you apart.
Jonas Schaefer, Baltimore Banner, Vinny at Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Jonas, last thing for you. Has it become a talking point at any point in the locker room about their lack of success at home? They lost 4 home games last year, counting the playoffs. Granted, the Pittsburgh game, they didn't play half their starters. And then they're 0-1 this year. Has that become a thing yet, that they're not protecting the bank as much as they used to?
That's a good question. I don't think I've heard anyone get asked about that. I think it would definitely become more of a talking point if you have a flop in primetime. Like, it's definitely a possibility on Sunday night. But no, I think you look at just how home field advantages have been kind of minimized over the years, with better travel, better technology. I mean, I think the lines in Vegas used to be like a 3-point favorite, and now I think the average is like 1.8 or 2 points. So it's even reflected in the betting markets. But yeah, I mean, the Ravens have done a good job traditionally of winning at home, especially winning in prime time. And I think because of how they started the season, they're going to need to make their bacon at home. And if they fall flat again in this one, then I think that the pressure is definitely going to be on, because you can't afford to have, you know, thousands of fans just not show up for games. It's bad optics, and you can't afford bad optics in a season that might spiral out of control if you start losing a couple more games.
Jonas Schaefer, Baltimore Banner, joins us every Friday. Jonas, appreciate it. Go crank up that Monkees CD you got there.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, Jonas.
Jonas Schaefer, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Whip around coming up next. Look back at last night's Thursday night victory by Dallas. Not impressive, but a win nonetheless. And then we'll talk about this busy college football weekend. Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com. Find out Nolan McGraw. News from the Nets coming up top of the hour. Going to hear from the Ravens coordinators.
Vinny and Haney's Whip. Brought to you by Fox Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. The best crab cakes in Harford County. 105.7 The Fan.
Hey, 105.7 The Fan here on this Featured Artist Friday. Just tuning in. It's the Monkees. And we haven't even gotten to the hits yet. So if you want to pick a song, send your request to Nolan. Applause for text line at 410-583-1057. There was Thursday Night Football. You heard it on The Fan. It was Dallas over the Giants. All right, not the most aesthetically pleasing game you're ever going to want to see. But a big stud receiver did stud receiver stuff.
Second year out of North Dakota State to the sideline. Here goes Lamb. He gets free on the inside. C.D. Lamb. Touchdown. And for a change, no flag.
C.D. Lamb, see you later. Al Michaels at prime on the call there. Yeah, a lot of yellow on the field last night in the Meadowlands. But 20-15, Dallas gets the win over the Giants. Dallas evens their record at 2-2, both wins on the road. Dak Prescott, a couple of touchdowns there in the victory. A robust quarterback rating of over 125. But Giants are offensively challenged. They couldn't run the ball. Daniel Jones didn't have the greatest of games, to say the least. And kind of a snooze fest,
yes,
in the Meadowlands. But a big win for the Cowboys because they certainly needed it.
Oh, they definitely need it. And Dak has beat the Cowboys, 13 straight times now? So, I mean, he owns them. I mean, neither team ran the ball well at all. And I think what made it kind of a snooze fest, there was so many penalties. Mm-hmm. Jesus criminy. I mean, every time you turned around, there was a flag. I mean, Al Michaels was like...
we just heard on the highlight.
Yeah. It was not pretty. I mean, C.D. Lamb, they got him the ball. He played well. Lawrence and Micah Parsons both got hurt, both getting MRIs today. So, I mean, those are two of their best defensive players. So if those guys go out, you know, that'll hurt them. But you got to give Dallas credit. I mean... they've been a sieve on defense, you know, stopping the run, and they basically shut the run down, which was hard to believe.
Dallas 11 penalties last night. Giants dominated time of possession, but couldn't get anything done offensively there. So they dropped to 1-3. We'll get into our picks later on in the show, 1:15 to be exact. See who picked New York. See who picked Dallas on that Thursday night extravaganza. Talk more about this next hour. Keith Cavanaugh about Maryland at Indiana, Big Ten tussle. Indiana 4-0, 1-0 in the league. That blowout win against UCLA a couple of weeks ago. Hoosiers are 6.5-point favorites. Noon kickoff, you can hear that on the Fan. Maryland, their first Big Ten road game of the season. Their first Big Ten game. They lost at home as favorites to Michigan State. It's Vinny at 81.057 The Fan. Whip around here on this Featured Artist Friday. This day in sports history, about 1980. In Wembley, Marvin Hagler, who we referenced earlier, actually officially Marvelous Marvin Hagler, won the undisputed middleweight championship, third round TKO over Alan Minter. Fight stopped on cuts, but Hagler literally knocked his mouthpiece out and was about to knock his head into the seats. Was stopped, then was pelted with bottles and debris as everybody was losing their minds. This was a fight that was on Wide World of Sports. Howard Cosell on the call. Even Cosell is too pay. We're running for cover. Marvin Hagler would defend that championship for 7 years before he got robbed by Sugar Ray Leonard, 1987. Then just said, bleep it, I'm out of here. Went to make movies in Italy as he became like the Rambo of Italy. Marvin Hagler sadly passed away 3 years ago. But Marvin Hagler, one of the great fighters of all time, won his middleweight championship on this day 44 years ago. Orioles history, how about a year ago today? Oriole Park, Camden Yards. Ellie Rutschman, two-run homer. Austin Hayes, 2-for-3 with a ribby. Grayson Rodriguez picked up the win, his seventh, as the Orioles win 5-1, getting close to clinching the East. Hayes is at Philly. Grayson's out for the year. So two guys that will not be helping the cause in the playoffs this season. Be nice if Adley got it together. How about Ravens history? 2009, M&T Bank Stadium gets the Cleveland Browns. Willis McGahee, 2 touchdowns. Joe Flacco, 72-yard touchdown pass to Derek Mason. Steve Auska kicked 2 field goals. Ravens blow out Cleveland 34-3. And then the Super Bowl year 2012, also at M&T, also against Cleveland. Joe Flacco, touchdown pass to Torrey Smith, ran for a TD as well. Kerry Williams with a pick six as the Ravens beat the Browns 23-16. This all took place on September the 27th. We'll come back. Chip Patterson, talk college football with him. We'll talk to Nolan McGraw, get his thoughts on life, and go to his fun house. And then news from the Nets coming up top of the hour. Good to hear from Mark Andrews. Where's he been? Zach Orr, where's his defense been in the fourth quarter? And Todd Monken, where was your offense in Dallas in the fourth quarter? So a lot to listen to. We're doing it here on The Fan. Hopefully the Yankees will get that number one seed so the Orioles could get them in the division series, because the Yankees got the Orioles last night big time, 10-1. No Corbin Burns getting pulled was not a doofus move by Brandon Hyde. It was the smart move, man. And think about that Tuesday when he's dealing in game one of the wild card playoffs. Ravens 2.5-point favorites take it on the Bills Sunday night in Baltimore. National TV extravaganza. Terps in Indiana tomorrow getting 6.5, looking for their first Big Ten win of the season. And other things in between. Here to talk some college football. Big weekend coming up in that landscape from CBSSports.com. Let's welcome back to the program our friend and yours, Chip Patterson. Chip, what is up?
How we doing? Yeah, good. Great weekend ahead. Fired up about it.
Now, Matthew Sluka, I had no idea who this kid was. Got to be totally honest with you, until a couple of days ago. Then he dropped a bombshell on the sports landscape. UNLV quarterback tapped out in season, was not given monies, $100,000, I guess, Chip, is the report that was promised to him verbally. Your impressions of what went down here and how this might be kind of the tip of the iceberg to what we might see moving forward here collegiately.
Well, I hope it drives us closer towards a system that is going to break the broken NIL landscape. Because, I mean, if I can simplify this for, you know, everybody who's listening to your fine program, the reason why these things happen is because coaches are not allowed to offer the NIL. The NIL has to be offered from the collectives. But the players cannot sign any contracts, no binding documents, until they have already enrolled to be players. And the coaches and the collectives, according to the rules, which I will admit are very much unenforceable, it seems, they're not supposed to be working together either. So the reason why we have this breakdown in terms of what was promised and what was delivered is because coaches are trying to recruit to make their teams better. Collectives are trying to do whatever they can to assist with the accumulation of talent. And because nothing is allowed to be put in writing until the commitment has been made, that's why we have these breakdowns in communications. Look, Matthew Sluka is a story because he's a quarterback. And because he's a quarterback at a UNLV team that is 3-0 for the first time since Randall Cunningham was the quarterback for the Running Rebels. And because UNLV, as one of the top teams in the Mountain West, has a chance to be our first Cinderella team, right? You know, the first team from the group of five to make the college football playoff. But Matthew Sluka is a 48% passer. And I talked to personnel evaluators who said that Haj Malik Williams, the quarterback who's going to be taken over on their board, was rated as a higher prospect. We have to remember that UNLV took 2 transfer quarterbacks in the same class. So the idea of what was promised, what was delivered in this situation, I think that every side looks bad. know, both quarterback and program. But my biggest, strongest takeaway is that this is where we need to be able to move a little bit closer towards collective bargaining. We need to move closer towards some sort of employment format, because then we go above board. We know what's promised. We know what needs to be delivered, and we put it on paper and we sign it without having to deal with all of these loopholes along the way.
Since we are based in a great explanation there, Chip, I just learned something about, well, first of all, Matthew Sluka, as we said, we didn't know, but Vinny pointed out, you know, he is 48%. It's not like he's Ken Anderson, old school reference deal in that football. But Maryland's going to Indiana tomorrow. They're still licking their wounds because we get Damon Evans on every week. Talk about all the athletic teams down in College Park. That Michigan State game, kind of galling. Especially if they could pull this one out tomorrow. But Indiana's 4-0. The quarterback's off the charts. They're running the ball with great effectiveness. Is Maryland kind of walking into the eye of the storm here against the Hoosiers team that, outside of blowing out UCLA, so hasn't really, air quotes, beaten anybody yet?
Right, but they are crushing teams.
Right.
I mean, what's our cumulative score? Like 202-39? I mean, I'm not off by many. I mean, they are absolutely obliterating teams. And that's where, especially here in late September, early October, I do start to apply that it's not who you play but how you play. And Kurt Cignetti has just changed it. I mean, that, obviously, the track record of what he was able to do at James Madison speaks to, you know, the relentlessness with which he coaches, and that's the way that Indiana plays. You mentioned the quarterback, Curtis Rourke. A couple years ago, was one of the best players in the MAC at Ohio, had some health issues along the way. He's healthy and looking as good as he's looked throughout his entire career. I think that what Indiana has done is sustainable. I think Indiana is going to end up finishing with maybe, like, I don't know, 9 wins on the season, which, given the expectation, is pretty surprising. But, I mean, look what the odds makers are saying for this game. I mean, they're saying that Indiana is the better team, and that's why I think it's a great, great test for what we think of the Hoosiers, because Maryland has been, I think, a little bit of a, I don't want to say a pleasant surprise, but I will say that I am encouraged by what we've seen out of Billy Edwards and out of the passing game. We knew that Ty Felton was a dude, but we didn't know that he was going to be able to maybe be one of the best wide receivers in the Big Ten. And Maryland is, like, just good enough defensively that if they can avoid the back-breaking mistakes, they can be the first real bit of resistance for Curtis Rourke in the Indiana offense. You're going to have to avoid, again, the back-breaking mistakes. You can't blow it. You got to be able to have the situational awareness that was lacking in that Michigan State defeat. But other than that, you know, the track record says this is a pretty the body of work says this is a pretty solid Maryland football team that should provide a test. That's why it's a one-score game. And I think it's going to be a little bit higher scoring. I don't think Indiana's defense has really been tested by anyone quite like what the Terps provide. So when you're getting into a little bit of a shootout, gets a little high scoring, again, situational awareness is going to become huge again.
Hey, Chip, Army won again last night. They sit 4-0. Are they going to be undefeated when they go to Yankee Stadium to play Notre Dame in November?
They're going to be undefeated when they wake up on Sunday after they beat Notre Dame. That's a good football team. That is just a good football team. And you know what? It's starting to speak to something that I am, like, starting to hover around. You know, we come into this year celebrating the likes of a Mike Norvell and Florida State and celebrating these teams that are going crazy on the transfer portal. And, you know, we're bagging on Dabo and bagging on Clemson. And I'm starting to wonder if, especially, you know, when we're seeing the Sluka situation at UNLV, you know, we're seeing some of these teams that have been cobbled together by the portal. Arizona in the Big 12 is one that stands out. They're just not crisp. And maybe over the course of the season they do improve. You know, Florida State could get better. They did finally get their first win of the season. But where so many teams are just sort of having to take it on a year-to-year basis, I think that there's an advantage for some of these true program development squads. And, you know, Clemson is one of them, but Army absolutely is one. And I just think they're coming out and they're playing all these teams that are trying to figure each other out. And Army not only knows exactly what it is, but Army is as dynamic offensively as it's been in a long time. You know, really being able to incorporate the pass a lot more than they have in the past. Pass, that's interesting. But, like, you know, they go into Temple last night they've thumped almost every team they've played. They handle their business in such a methodical way. They know who they are. They do it well. I'm just so impressed with the squad that Jeff Monken has right now. And it's a nice reminder that, you know, all these years when we've been looking at coaching searches and mentioning Jeff Monken as a coach you should look at, he gets pushed to the side because everyone thinks he's going to be a triple option coach. No, I promote Jeff Monken as a candidate for bigger jobs because he's just a good football coach. And I think Army in 2024 is continuing to prove that.
Isn't that Todd's brother too? I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the same family. I forgot whether we're which part of the family tree we're dealing in. But, yes, we are in the same Monken family. Yes.
Hey, Chip, if I had to watch one game tomorrow, which one do I have to watch?
I mean, come on. Why are you going to put me on the spot like that? I mean, I know who pays this mortgage. I'm going to tell you to watch USC Wisconsin, 3:30 p.m. on CBS, America's Most Watch Network, the network of stars. I mean, I'll tell you what. There was a conversation that I observed this week that is that's kind of making me think a lot about the current expanded college football playoff era. And I agree, having more teams have a chance in November will be a lot of fun. And I agree that these on-campus playoff games are going to be really fun. But I do miss the days where Georgia against Alabama at the end of September was just like a do or die kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And you really feel like the loser out of this is going to come out with hurt feelings, but probably could still accomplish all their goals, probably could still compete for an SEC championship, probably could still go into the college football playoff and compete for a national championship, because I'm really getting some of those old school, mid-2000s, like this is just one of the biggest games that we're going to get all year. So I'm very excited. I'm going a little throwback with my preparation on this one, because while a cynical view says there are no stakes because of these teams, their talent, the conference they play in, I know the players in those locker rooms and the coaches on those staffs are not treating it like this. This is an old school slobber knocker game of the year type setup that we've got in Tuscaloosa. The storylines are all over the place, and I'll be excited when we go live on the Cover 3 podcast around 11:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night for our Week 5 reaction show. I'll be excited to discuss it however it goes.
And the line went from Georgia -2 to them getting a half a point.
Ooh.
Here in just a couple of days. He's Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com. Chip, always appreciate the time. Cover 2, man, we'll be listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Chip.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
There's Chip Patterson, everybody. So watch out for Indiana tomorrow, laying a hefty number against Maryland, 6.5. You can hear that game at noon here on 105.7 The Fan, and we'll preview it with Keith Cavanaugh coming up at 12:30. Funhouse, Nolan McGraw coming up next. News from the Nest, top of the hour. We're going to hear from Mark Andrews. Where's he been? Zach Gore, where's your defense been in the fourth quarter, Todd Monken? Where'd your offense go in the fourth quarter against Dallas? We'll revisit that, and we'll count some dough, hopefully, at 12:15 heading into the weekend, buy or sell. Don't mean to rag on the monkeys because it was chosen by the people. Nolan, you feeling this or no?
Some of the people are taking exception with your Beatles and monkeys.
Yeah.
Not just the comparisons, but some people actually think the monkeys are better.
I don't know. Are we handing out drugs today on 105.7 The Fan?
It could be trolling, but I think that's what they're saying.
Duh. You think? Anywho, it's all about personal. I've said it with music 1,000 times. I like what I like. I don't give a crap if anybody likes what I like or not. As long as it pacifies me, that's all that matters. And people are getting pacified, so God bless them, right? I asked what you're feeling, though.
Right. Well, they do sound like they sound like the Beatles, that's for sure.
Yeah, now it's crazy talk. I think everybody's hallucinating. All this trippy music's got people tripping over here. How you doing there, Nolan?
I'm doing just fine. One more final thought here on the whole Corbin Burns thing.
Yeah.
While I did admit earlier in the show that I was a little rubbed the wrong way watching the game in real time, I'm a fan of the Orioles. I'd like to see the Orioles win every game they play. So it's a one-run game. The ace gets pulled. Initial reaction, a little frustrated. But had he stayed in the game, what's he going to do? Another inning, another two innings? It doesn't change the fact that the Orioles lineup last night was non-existent like they have been in weeks prior. Doesn't change the fact that when Hyde did eventually have to turn to his bullpen, even if it was an inning or two later, they were in no shape to compete last night.
Man.
So all right, Burns gets a full workload last night to satisfy that section of the fan base. Really not feeling confident that that even ends in a win. So with that in mind, again, reinforces the decision to pull him early.
Yeah, and the Orioles didn't score till the ninth, and it was on a sack fly at that. So the bats, I said it in the opening of the show, not saying they weren't trying, but it was almost like the bus was running and they couldn't wait to get out of Dodge. So the Yankees win the East. Congratulations to them. Orioles can win or clinch the top wild card. Playoffs start next Tuesday. Finish the Twins. I mean, Minnesota's chances to make the playoffs, we talk about teams that choked, was like 93-94% just 3 weeks ago. Now they need a miracle to get in. So Minnesota, talk about some fadage right there. And there's some big games coming up. We'll get to the schedules later on in the program. We got time for a funhouse trip real quick before we get to news.
We do. Yes, we do.
Let's do it.
Quick Draws Funhouse. The Rudeness Tuneness Text Reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that quick draw.
105.7 The Fan.
We'll start with this person who says, I'm not sure what to think about Yennier Cano right now. He started a clean inning last night. Still can't take advantage. I feel like Hyde is truly rolling the dice every time he goes to the pen. None of these guys can turn in back-to-back solid outings.
Well, Hyde said after the game, health-wise, he's fine. Maybe the confidence level's a little bit shaky because he got lit up a couple of nights ago, letting the inherited runners score. So Yennier Cano's going to be big for them in high-leverage situations in the playoffs. He's got to step up. And I'll see in Al Perez, it's great you can catch home runs with your hat. And he does keep the ball in the park. He hadn't given up a home run in, what, like 100 innings or something crazy? But, you know, limit the damage. I was very disappointed in those two last evening. Like Baker and Bowman. I mean, come on. What the hell? Baker throws so hard, but so straight.
More
so
on the
souvenir-y.
This texter says, is Cade Povich in line for a long relief role in the playoffs, or does he still need more to prove or have more to prove tonight before Hyde can feel comfortable?
Well, let's assume for the wild card round anyway, Suarez is in the bullpen. Mm-hmm. Povich pitches well tonight. It helps his cause to make the postseason roster. Hey, is Holiday going to be part of this thing? Where's Emmanuel Rivera fit in? Kerstad? I mean, a lot of guys are going to be playing for possible what, because they could change the roster with each round. But Povich pitches well tonight, he'll be on that wild card roster.
And one more here, this on Sunday night's matchup. Texter says, Ravens versus Bills. How do we think the expected rain in the forecast will have an impact on the game, if any?
What I saw was rain and wind in the morning and then sun later in the day. So I don't know. But, you know, we heard Harbs the other day say that they practiced out in the rain, and that was the greatest thing. That's like real football. You're practicing in the rain, getting to work with a wet ball and stuff. I don't think it's going to affect the Ravens or the Bills. I mean, look what the Bills play in all the time up there.
It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. News from the Nest coming up next. Going to hear from Mark Andrews and Zach Orr and Todd Monken. Buy or sell. Let's count that dough, man. Heading into the weekend, I could go for some crustaceans, watching some baseball, football on a Saturday. Keith Kavanaugh previews Maryland, Indiana coming up tomorrow at noon. A game you can hear on The Fan. And American League East and Beyond report as Detroit, they just won't lose. Tampa, they're scuffling. And Kansas City's gotten hot at the right time. The Twins, however,